Hey folks, quick story for you. Have you heard about Imagine Golf? If you haven't, I would encourage you to go into the App Store, search Imagine Golf, and join the over 200,000 golfers around the world who have made this a part of their daily ritual to improve their golf game. A few months ago, I was introduced to a gentleman named Malcolm Scoville. He's the visionary behind the app. Malcolm has worked with other great meditation-based apps like Calm, and he's bringing that expertise into the world of golf, which is something he's very passionate about. Malcolm and I connected. I've loved hearing his story. And the coolest thing to me about this mission that he's on is that he every day wakes up thinking, how can I help change the outcomes for people, both in golf and in their lives, through an improved mental game? It's a really cool app. They do these really fantastic 3-minute daily drive lessons that you can just, you know, listen to when you're either on your way to work or nowadays just maybe taking the dog for a walk, who knows? Or how about when you're out on the putting green or the driving range? It's available to you at any time. It's free to download, 7-day no commitment trial. You can still listen to it even if you don't do the paid subscription, although I would tell you, go in and unlock that door. You will not regret it. Malcolm and his team have done just an excellent job of curating the kinds of things that you need to be hearing to improve your mental game on a daily basis. I do it. I love it. You know me. I like to get into the spiritual side of golf, as does Malcolm, and as do all of those who are contributing to the app. I think you're really going to like it, folks. Go and check out Imagine Golf. And as my friend Malcolm likes to say, keep imagining what's possible. Hey there, friends. Jay Revel here. Welcome to another edition of Mid-Am Crisis. It is good to be back with you after a brief hiatus. I'm sorry to leave you hanging, but I had to go spend 5 days in Pinehurst, North Carolina. And for those of you in the know who have spent time in the North Carolina Sandhills, you'll know exactly how, well, on one hand, depressed I am that that trip is over. But on the other hand, just how exhilarating a few days at that great resort and those great communities can really leave you. I just have been working on this trip. We took 24 guys up there. It was an incredible time. Been working on it for months. A lot of buildup, a lot of excitement, and then just to get back there, to be there with so many close friends and enjoying just all the incredible golf offerings that are available in Pinehurst was such a special treat. And while I was there, I got to run into my good friend Tom Pashley, who is the president of the Pinehurst Resort. If you don't know Tom, I would encourage you to look him up because he's probably one of the great thought leaders and innovators in the golf industry today, in my opinion. What he has done since taking over the day-to-day operations of the resort in 2014 is really remarkable. I mean, Pinehurst has always been a legendary place for golfers to visit, but they've really taken it up a notch. And to be frank, I think they have elevated the entire industry in doing so. Things like the development of the Cradle, one of the best 9 holes in 10 acres. It's really just a golf playground when you think about it. The renovation of Pinehurst number 4, the continued, just incredible things happening on Pinehurst number 2, one of the great championship golf courses here in the United States. They had obviously, the U.S. Amateur there a couple of years ago, which was a huge deal. And then you look at what's happening with even, you know, one of the shorter courses like Pinehurst number 3 that has its own unique branding and identity and has become a real hit for a lot of people traveling to that resort. Then when you add on top of it just the amount of engagement that Tom and his team have helped produce by, you know, bringing in various influential voices in the games and beautiful, talented creators who come there and spend time there and enjoy the resort. It's really just incredible. They have become the model, I believe, for what a long-time existing golf resort needs to do to stay relevant in this new century. And a lot of it is due to Tom and the vision that he and the ownership have had there and their ability to execute. And I just have enjoyed
the opportunity to get to know him this year. This actually was my second trip to Pinehurst this year, which I consider myself very, very lucky for that. On my first trip, I got a chance to have dinner with Tom and get to know him a little bit and talk a lot about the resort. And then while I was up there with my gang last week, I had the chance to speak with him a little bit again, and he was kind enough to give me some time to come on the podcast and have a more in-depth discussion about all things Pinehurst and everything that's going on there and a lot of things that are still to come. You've probably seen the news about the USGA setting up their second headquarters in Pinehurst, making Pinehurst a U.S. Open anchor site. All of those things get touched on in this conversation that Tom and I had this week. Again, some great fun recapping of my trip, obviously. But on top of that, we talked extensively about life behind the Pine Curtain, if you will. I've got him working on trying to figure out, you know, how to convince my wife to move up there. But all those things are in the works, and we dive into a little bit of all that in this discussion. Tom is a great guy. He's so generous with his time, and just, you know, if you saw him walking around the resort, you just think he was another happy customer, because he's always got a smile on his face. He's very outgoing, and he's just someone who you can tell loves golf. He loves Pinehurst, and he loves the work that he gets to do every day. And really, that's all any of us could ever hope to be. And he's a family man, again, someone who just, you know, is always quick to go out of his way to make sure that everyone's having a hospitable experience when on property, and he does it extremely well. So without further ado, I'm going to turn it over to my conversation with Tom Pashley, president of Pinehurst Resort. I think you're really going to like this one, folks. And if you haven't been to Pinehurst, now is a really good time to book your trip.
Tom.
Jay.
How are you, my man?
I'm great. How are you doing?
Super. Man, I'm doing as good as I can coming off of, you know, 5 days at your wonderful resort. I'm really crashing, burning, sliding into the guardrails. Really could use a struggle bus driver, but, you know, I'm all I got. So, well, making it.
Do you agree that I've told people, I think the anticipation of the golf trip and all the pre-trip stuff is almost half the fun. And so,
no doubt about it.
Yeah. And then the trip is the second half. And then you go through the morning phase. So,
oh, yeah. Yeah. For sure. We were, you know, so let's see. I went up there. I left Tallahassee. It's 6 a.m. The flight was at 6 a.m. I left my house at about 4:45. We've got, by the way, if you ever need a great airport, you know, Tallahassee's it. I mean, you can go curb to gate in about 5 minutes. But
wow.
So, you know, left the house about 4:45 Wednesday morning, which happened to be my birthday. And my wife texted me an hour later and just said, "I hope you have a great day. You seem very excited to leave us behind." You know. And we were pretty pumped. We happen to have three guys every year whose birthdays are on consecutive days in that first week of June. And that's always the week we take the trip. So the three of us take our birthday chips and our Father's Day chips and push them all out on the table and just really milk it for all it's worth. So, of course, you know, we pay for it severely on the back end. But, yeah, you're right. I mean, there were a lot of lunches and text thread conversations, you know, leading up to the trip, getting everybody pretty jacked up. And, you know, when you're there, you're just on cloud nine. And then, you know, and then you have to wake up on Sunday morning and start kind of, you know, facing reality. But
yeah, and neat that you can. I had never considered, you know, parlaying two occasions like birthday and Father's Day. And it's good timing to having your birthday that close to be able to get a 2-for-1.
Oh man, I'm all about trying to, you know, connive my way into, you know, any bonus golf trip I can. But you know, it's been a fortunate year. I got, you know, the chance to go up there. Well, we got to hang out a little bit back in March, and right. You know, to come back again a few months later to have, you know, two trips to Pinehurst in one season essentially is just, you know, I'm really pressing my luck. So I got a feeling my things are going to turn south from here, but we'll see. I'll tell you, man, we just had such an outstanding experience. Your team, we had 24 guys that went up, and your team was so good and so easy to work with from day one. And then obviously, you know, being on the ground, I commend you because –
you know, there were so many people up there, and there wasn't a frown on any face. And, you know, there's a lot of ping pong that happens on some of those greens. So if you can keep people smiling through all that, you're doing a lot of things right.
Well, 24 is that's admirable that you took the helm on a group that large. That's a lot of logistics and mechanics and preparation on your part. But it, you know, I think we do those size groups well. It's nice to, you know, the shuttle system, which is maybe something that we underrate, you know, allows people to get where they need to get when they do, so you don't have cars flying around everywhere. And anyhow, I appreciate your comments on the team and the logistics, because we work real hard at it, and it's good to know that it works in practice.
Yeah, they really did a great job, and we're very flexible. You know, we kind of were dragging a little bit trying to get on the cradle Saturday afternoon, and then we took, you know, we had a shootout out there on the cradle with 15 guys in it, and you know, I can tell, I didn't know if Kurt wanted to, you know, slap me around a little bit, but I got a very nice note from him yesterday, you know, telling me that how much he enjoyed, you know, kind of watching all that. And I think we put on a little bit of entertainment for some of the other guests, but but it was fun. Yeah, I tell you, the one that blows my mind is how y'all can move the physical golf bags around as well as you do. You know, I mean, just they just kind of magically show up wherever you need them to be, you know.
Yeah, I see that a lot, and people appreciate that. It is a place where however you get here, whether you take a shuttle or a car, once you're here, you just kind of you stop worrying about logistics, and your bag, you know, magically shows up where you're supposed to be, and you're not having to get in and out of your car. So yeah, it's underrated, I guess, the logistics side of things. You're really here to play golf, and you just don't want any other thing holding you back. And so we try to prevent distractions and make it look seamless, although there's a lot of, you know, planning and effort that goes into it.
Well, when I saw you last up there on, let's see, I guess it was Saturday afternoon, you were out there rolling the rock a little bit, had a big smile on your face too. I have to imagine, you know, it's a pretty cool feeling to look out upon those grounds and see so many people having so much fun. You know, so the question I might maybe to kind of get things rolling is how does one get to that position? What was your personal journey like to get to a place where, you know, you're, as I introduced you to my brother, the guy who's got the cradle playlist on his phone.
Oh, that was impressive. Yeah, you know, I don't think he quite knew what to do with that either. He was a little flat-footed. but no, I am, you know, very fortunate to be the president of Pinehurst, and never imagined that this would be an opportunity for me. I started out I grew up in Augusta, Georgia, first of all, so I was in the shadows of a well-known golf facility in a very popular annual tournament. And so that I think somewhat influenced, you know, my interest in golf, to see every spring. Back then it was, you know, white Cadillacs driving around town, and you're trying to peer inside the window to see who it is. And, you know, our neighbors a couple houses down rented their house out to Gary Player one year, a year that he won the Masters. And we got to go back to that house after he'd left, and he had left behind gloves and tees and balls. And we were, you know, in awe of these relics that were left behind. So I grew up a little bit around golf there in Augusta, played municipal golf at the Cabbage Patch in Forest Hills for people who know Augusta golf. And then I went to college and was an accounting major and became a CPA when I graduated from University of Georgia. And worked in public accounting for a couple of years, decided that's not what I wanted to do. Went to graduate school at Duke's Fuqua School of Business. And really that's where things began to happen that opened golf doors for me. I was adamant that I wanted to try to pursue a career in the golf industry. So I was going down dead ends here and there. And I ended up meeting the men's golf coach, Rod Myers, at Duke. And asked him if there was any way I could help him, you know, with the golf team, and clearly not on any sort of instructional level, but more on an administrative level, where there are things I could do. So Rod Myers at Duke smiled upon me and allowed me to become his graduate assistant coach. And really what he had me do was try to help recruit a little bit. And so that opened doors. Now I was able to put graduate assistant golf coach on my resume, and I tried different avenues with golf equipment manufacturers and continued to struggle with some of those. But in the end, I met the president of Pinehurst at the time, back in 1995, I guess it was. And Rod Myers introduced me to him and came down here for an interview. And they created a position for me at the time that allowed me to spend a year going through every department that is at Pinehurst, whether it's the front desk or the kitchen or the golf maintenance team. So I got to spend a year kind of watching, observing, and learning. And when that ended, I started working on the team that ran the 1999 U.S. Open. So anyhow, I got involved at Pinehurst, right out of business school, and had the opportunity to work on U.S. Opens. And I became the director of marketing, and then head of sales and marketing. And then after the 2014 U.S. Open, my predecessor Don Padgett retired, and I moved into the president job. So, I just feel very fortunate and privileged that my passion for golf has been able to combine with my career. I glossed over, Jay, I'm feeling like I'm going on too long about this.
No, it's good.
I glossed over the fact that when I graduated from high school, my parents sent my brother and I on a golf trip. He's 2 years older than I am. Uh-huh. And he chose the destination, and he chose Pinehurst. And I had never heard of Pinehurst back then. And so we came here, right out of high school in 1987. And we'd laugh about checking in at the Carolina Hotel and reconfirming our dinner reservations. And they said, well, jackets are required in the Carolina dining room. And we said, oh, sure, of course. And we had no jackets, and we panicked. And but then, luckily back then, they had a coat closet in the lobby bathroom. And we got two ill-fitting, plaid jackets and kept them with us. So I kind of developed my passion and my love for Pinehurst back then in 1987, when I was, again, a golf fan, but I didn't really know good golf. And we came here, and we're taking rolls of film on every golf course that we played, and it was neat to learn more about the history that's happened at Pinehurst, and to be with my brother, who is a better player than I am, but who kind of helped share his passion for golf with me. And so anyhow, that's how Pinehurst inserted into all of that, was that I knew that this was a special place, and it was a place I had been as a guest. And so I think that helps, as I always try to put myself in the shoes of the guest and look at things from the guest perspective. I was one once, and I think that helps guide some of the decisions that I make on a daily basis.
It's funny. There's a very distinct sense of place there. I was describing it to some of the guys who had not been there before. When we were getting geared up and getting ready to go. And I said, there's a lot of great golf resorts out there. We've been to a lot of them, but there's something different about Pinehurst. And I think it's part of it is, it's the village, the quaintness of it. It feels like a town that just happens to be completely, infatuated with golf. Which is rare. I'm just not sure there's, obviously you hear people talk about Pinehurst being the St. Andrews of the States, or the home of American golf. Mm-hmm. I have never found another community in the United States that is so directly tied to golf. And to me, that is one of the things that I find so intoxicating about it. Like Sunday morning, I woke up, and this is like one of the things, even though I had to leave that day, we got late checkout and late flights. And one of the reasons I did that is I wanted to go on foot and just take, a couple of hours and just walk everywhere. And, I went for this walk through the village and up and down some of these really cool, quaint, quiet streets, and the birds were chirping, and I didn't really know where I was going. I was just kind of exploring, getting lost for fun. And I end up popping back out on Midland Road right there I guess that would be between, number two green and number three tee on number two. And I just kind of, sort of snuck my way back on the golf course and walked up two and one, on a Sunday morning, and the church bells are ringing. And I'm watching these guys go out for their morning round and, you know, kind of observing them through the pines. And I'm just smitten with it, man. That whole scene is just so unique to me. I just haven't found anywhere else that has whatever that quality is. And I just find the whole thing to be fabulous. So I can get how you could get sucked in and end up spending a whole career there.
Well, it's funny hearing you say that, how you kind of meandered, I think might have been the word you used. And, mm-hmm. and it's the Village of Piners was designed by Frederick Law Olmsted, who did mm-hmm. Central Park and Biltmore Estate. And so he really did design it to have this curved linear, these streets that mm-hmm. that wind. And I like to think, you know, there's around every corner, there's this sense of discovery. And, mm-hmm. and so you feel like you get turned around, but you never get too far from the middle. But it is that meandering sense of discovery that makes you, you know, continue to the next street corner to see what's behind that curve and behind that hedge. And what you said about it, you know, there are locals in Pinehurst. And so it is a place, it's a real place. It is a village. And so, you know, one of the questions people always ask when you're out playing number two or when you get around the housing, people, you know, how much does a house like that cost? So I think people begin to imagine themselves here. You know, you're like, man, I could retire here. This would be a dream. So I think that is one part of Pinehurst that does make it unique compared to some other destinations, that it's a real town that has locals in it that you see. And it's not just, you know, it's not just a resort. It is a community. And you can envision yourself one day retiring here. So,
yeah, it's funny. You brought up the Olmsted brothers. You know, so when I was in graduate school, I started off in urban and regional planning, and I quickly realized the world had enough planners and my skills could be better used in a different arena. But I took a class. It was probably one of my favorite classes I ever took. It was called Streets and the Shaping of Towns and Cities.
Wow.
And we studied the Olmsted brothers quite a bit. And it's funny, I think that is one of the reasons that I just adore that whole place, is it's very intentional. All of that is, you know, intentional from the onset, you know, at the founding of the community and the resort. And today I can still see a whole different kind of intention that comes through, which, you know, I think a lot of that is, you know, credit to your vision and the vision of the, you know, the organization. And yeah, again, standing there with you on the putting green, you look out, you've got, you know, people on the Thistle Dew course, you know, having the time of their life. The cradle's completely bumping with people, and groups going off four, groups going off three, groups going off one, groups going off. It's just an amazing saturation of golf atmosphere. It really is incredible. Not to gush on your place too much, but I'm sure you don't get too tired of it.
No, I'm chuckling and laughing, and it is, you know, there's just, you know, for people, if you like to people watch, you know, people watching is an activity in and of itself, and you can just sit on that porch at the main clubhouse and see it. And like you said earlier, there's a smile on everybody's face. They're where they want to be. They've been thinking about coming here. And then you can contrast it, though, with going out to like a number eight, which is only 5 minutes away.
Yeah.
From the main clubhouse, but suddenly you go from hustle and bustle at the main clubhouse, and then you can go out to Pinehurst number eight, where you're in, you know, an Audubon sanctuary out there. You've got no houses around the golf course. You've got one clubhouse. You know, it's a place where you can hear the sounds of nature. The birds are chirping, some wildlife. So it's nice to have, you know, the center hub of activity here at the main clubhouse, but then it's a nice change of pace when you can go out to the outlying courses as well.
Yeah, I totally agree. You know, it was funny for us, you know, I think when you're up there in that environment, obviously there are crowds, but it never feels crowded to me. But I, you know, kind of doing a debrief after our trip, I think a lot of guys really gravitated to, we had this just quiet Friday afternoon out at number eight, and basically had the place to ourselves. At the end of the day, the sun's going down. We're sitting there watching our groups come up on 18 right there. And a lot of guys, you know, mentioned to me how much they enjoy that experience, just because it gave us a chance to just be, you know, on our own. And I think what's so cool about the resort is that you have so many different vignettes of golf experiences that you can go and enjoy kind of no matter what your flavor is. There's a lot to sample there, just like the buffet at the Carolina every morning. You know?
Yeah, I would imagine you might have had to go up a belt loop. Although you're walking a lot, so you're burning it off during the day.
I think I walked, you know, probably 60,000-70,000 steps over 5 days, and okay. still gained weight, which is impressive. Tom, how would you obviously 2020 was a very challenging year, but it also has spun off some very interesting results in the golf industry. Resort seemed pretty packed the other day. How has that journey been? I'm sure you probably had some pretty quiet and dark days around there when the pandemic first kicked off, but you know, could you paint me a picture of what things were like then and what we've, you know, emerged into these days?
And you're right. It's amazing to see how far we've come in such a short amount of time to be enjoying the business levels we are right now. We couldn't have anticipated that last March when, the big moment for us was when we chose to close down our hotels. We have three hotels. You mentioned the Carolina, the Holly Inn, and the Manor. And there was just so much uncertainty and restaurants were closing, we just felt it was the right time and the right thing to do to go ahead and close the hotels, although golf remained open. So our hotels were closed for two and a half months. Wow. And then we reopened in June and pretty quickly began to see the golfers returning. You know, the outdoor social distancing, all those things that played into golf's favor were being experienced here. And we had a very busy fall from a leisure travel standpoint. The one thing that maybe a lot of listeners may not know about our business here is that we do have a lot of meeting space over at the Carolina Hotel. So we do have a pretty significant amount of corporate gatherings that happen here in addition to the leisure travel. And clearly the corporate gatherings had ended. Normally that's about half of our business. So we didn't have any of that going on, but the golfers were filling up the rooms and filling up the golf courses in the fall. And so we were seeing very positive signs. And then the spring came and it's been nonstop, really. And I think, you know, golf is your ability to participate in golf has a lot of different factors, but time and money are two of the big ones. And I think people, you know, regained a lot of control over their time during the pandemic, and they didn't spend a lot of their money on other things that they might have had planned otherwise. I know for me as a parent, all my kids' travel sports ended. We weren't going to all these different trips that we normally did. So we found ourselves with more time and more money. And I think that the byproduct of that is that now people are beginning to travel and they're playing this golf. And we've seen so much more of a youth movement as well. Our average age seems to have dropped by 10 years compared to what we used to experience in a normal spring. And that's been refreshing. I think there was a time when Pinehurst was kind of considered, the historic destination that the older crowd enjoyed coming to. And we never want to lose that. We always have that. We want to respect the traditions of the game. But now I'm seeing, whereas a parent used to bring their child to Pinehurst and say, look at these trophies. Now the kids are bringing the parents and say, look at this place. So anyhow, the pandemic definitely did, you know, we had our dark days, but we were able to rally and do some great things from an auction standpoint and saw how much the golf world was rooting for Pinehurst to get through it. And now we're on the other side and we're just overwhelmed by the number of people that are coming here on a daily basis and enjoying being outside and enjoying just like you and your 23 other guys did. And sandwiched in there, and I know you'll get into it, but sandwiched into last year during some of the challenging times, we had the big announcement about the future of the USGA's presence at Pinehurst. So we did have, you know, it really was a roller coaster ride that had some valleys, but it also had a lot of peaks.
You know, I've always really enjoyed talking with, working with visionary leadership. When I have someone on the podcast, you know, I always like to give them a Google just to see what comes up, right? You never know what kind of fun things you might find about someone. Sometimes that makes people shudder, but when I Googled you the other day in preparation for this conversation, I actually found an interview, I guess, with a local news outlet that you did right when you were ascending to become the president. And it was just on the heels of the 2014, you know, back-to-back U.S. Opens with the men and women. And it's funny because you mentioned some of the things that you just mentioned now, right, about making sure that Pinehurst is a place that future generations want to come, you know, to, that they seek out. And then also, you know, looking to get more USGA, you know, events here. And now, you know, again, you've got this, you know, a few years down the road, here we are with a cradle experience that is, you know, built for people of all ages and just, you know, one of the most fun 10 acres that you can have in the golf world. You have all these amazing things happening. And now you've got this announcement last year with the USGA making Pinehurst an anchor site for the U.S. Open Championships. I you know, tip of the cap to you because it sounded like, you know, everything you mentioned in that interview back then is coming to fruition. So how did that all come about? How did you pull that off?
Well, it's funny you mentioned that that interview, and I think I can recall it where, you know, one of the things I've said over the years is that, you know, we don't want Pinehurst to be a time capsule, and it's never a place we want people to say, oh, that place used to be great, this guy won there, and stop being relevant. And I don't think I have to say that much anymore. You know, we have convinced people that it's not a time capsule. You know, we're very fortunate, Jay, when you ask how did we do it. It starts with our owners, and the Dedman family has owned Pinehurst really since 1984. And the Dedman family also founded Club Corporation of America, CCA Club Corp, and had that company that Pinehurst was part of. They used to have the Homestead Resort, Barton Creek Resort. But the family sold Club Corp in 2006, but retained us. So they kept Pinehurst because it was that special to them, and they wanted to continue to be stewards of it. So it kind of starts with having the right attitude and the right philosophy of ownership. And they really do view themselves as stewards of Pinehurst, you know, for future generations, and not just, you know, a company trying to seek a return on an annual basis. So Bob Dedman, my boss, you know, has a vision for what he wants Pinehurst to be. And he wants it to be a golf playground and a golf heaven on earth, if you will. And I think that helps us as we think through all these different options and try to decide what's best. Something as simple as the cradle, you know, that looks so obvious now, that it's on 10 acres. You know, we've got thousands of acres of land, and on that one little spot, you know, that one little plot of 10 acres, we've been able to do something that has done more, in my opinion, to kind of transform the perception of Pinehurst than anything we've done, you know, in the last couple of decades. So we've got great ownership, great vision, and an appetite to continue innovating. You know, it's not over. We want to continue to improve, continue to innovate. Something like our brewery, Pinehurst Brewing Company, you know, what we're able to do is lean on our history. So you go back to another big success was the restoration of Pinehurst number 2. And I think what made that so successful was that we were going back to what we used to be. And so, you know, people asked, is that going to drive your decisions in the future? And we were kind of like, not necessarily. We were going back to something. But taking our old original steam plant building in the village of Pinehurst and repurposing it as a modern day brewery and restaurant, connects well with people. So, you know, going back to our past to help guide our future is one of the things that we try to focus on, to have inspiration or innovation, but to have it be inspired innovation, inspired by something perhaps that comes from the past.
Yeah. And it certainly seems to be working. You know, I admire that approach because I think about, you know, sort of the jewels of the resort, perhaps when you talk about the full golf courses. You obviously have number 2, which is just an incredible, you know, it's not a, that course to me is very low key. And, brilliant in its subtle ways of rejecting you. it's just a brilliant golf course, and the way that it's being presented today is just an incredible thing to behold. But then, you go just a few hundred yards away and you're on number four, which is just this, like, I don't know, this feels like this 80s power ballad inspired by, number two, right? I mean, it's just really rocks. That is an incredible piece of property, and what an adventure that golf course is, to take you around. And I think, pretty bold of you guys to go and take a, what I assume was probably a reasonably successful golf course to begin with, and let Gil go, get on the dozer and turn his Grateful Dead on and go to town. But man, I was really blown away with number four. How has that been? I know, again, when you pull the trigger on something like that, you got a lot of dynamics in play, because not only do you have guests that are coming, but you got a membership that's pretty significant too, that you have to work around. So how does that work when you're trying to move those needles in new directions?
Yeah. The number four is an interesting one, and you're right. It was a well-regarded, redo of Donald Ross did the original four, and then it went through several different machinations, and the most recent being a Tom Fazio golf course that debuted in 1999, I think. And so deciding that we wanted to alter it, was a little counterintuitive. And it really began with the restoration of Pinehurst number two. That was so well received and took it back to that Sand Hills aesthetic of wiregrass, sandy, natural areas, that suddenly number four, being a neighbor to this more natural number two, number four began to feel, different, didn't feel like it had as much kinship to its neighbor next door. And so we felt like it was time to relook at number four, and Gil came in and really wanted to put the land back to where it naturally sat. Some of it had been moved over the many different iterations of that golf course, and Gil started just by pushing the land back to where it was supposed to be, and then we'll begin shaping it. But for the most part, the corridors were all intact, and he didn't create too many. He created two new holes, I guess, with new corridors. But we wanted it to be a better companion to Pinehurst number two. And when you play number two and then you look across the distance and you see four sitting over there, it feels like a proper family member. And mm-hmm. and he was wildly successful. But like I said, a lot of people love the old number four, but we just felt like from a cohesiveness standpoint, it was not being cohesive with what we were kind of considering the original four. The Ross original four golf courses, we think, need to have a shared lineage and a shared DNA that it had skipped a generation, it seemed, by having number four what it was. So a lot of hard work went into that. And you did mention a lot of, just factors that we have. We've got tournaments happening every year. We've got membership that have, needs and demands to play our different golf courses. So it is a balancing act to keep everybody happy. But what happened with number four, by the way, when it debuted, we were hosting the U.S. Amateur in 2019. And so the USGA played stroke play on number two and number four, and then match play was played all week on number two. But when they had the final two people in the finals of match play, 36 hole final, they played the morning round on number four and then the afternoon round on number two. And it was the first time they had kind of deviated from playing 36 holes on the same golf course. So that was a big, shot in the arm to us, that they thought enough of Pinehurst number four that it was worthy of hosting a national amateur that early in its career. So it's great, Jay, to have, a number four now, that when I go in the deuce and listen to golfers kind of bantering about, what's your favorite one? Which one did you like better? Number two used to be the obvious choice, the history and all the championships. It was just easy to default to number two. But I really enjoy hearing the more spirited debate now of people trying to decide, did they like two or four better? It's a dialogue that didn't used to exist. And we love hearing it at this point.
Yeah, it's a very good problem to have if you got people trying to debate between two of your babies. I mean, they're just both fantastic, and I think our guys were pretty smitten on on all fronts there, which, you know, takes me to the question, what's next? You know, you've got 9 golf courses out there. Obviously, some of them you probably are pretty happy with. But, you know, do you have some inclinations as to if there are other projects along those lines coming soon?
Yeah, you know, number 8 is 25 plus years old. And so we intend to close number 8 next summer and just go in and do some cleanup work, kind of give it some TLC. Really over the years, the bunkering has aged and the fairways have got a lot of organic material. So we're going to go in and try to make number 8 play firmer and faster. So mm-hmm. we'll be shut down for one summer and do a lot of work to kind of give it, a little attention after 25 years. So that's more cosmetic, but with firm and fast is kind of the philosophy that we're trying to embrace out there. And the good news again about thinking of what's next is we're sitting on 900 acres. A lot of your listeners probably are familiar with the old course called the Pit down the road. And so, I don't know, it's probably going on 10 years or so that the Pit closed and we acquired it after it had been shut down for several months. And we also owned 700 acres of land that kind of surround it. And so we now have 900 acres plus that are all contiguous. And that allows us to dream mm-hmm. and think about what could it be. And so Bill Coore and Ben Crenshaw, back when they were working on number 2, went down and looked at that land, and they on paper routed a golf course that they think could be pretty special. And we've just been sitting on that routing for almost a decade. But now with all the renewed interest in the business levels that we're seeing, we're having more significant conversations about what we're going to do down there. And people have really embraced, you know, the cradle and our putting course, Thistledew. So we want to figure out, you know, what is the next chapter and what is a mashup, if you will, between the cradle and Thistledew and another golf course, perhaps, or some short loops, you know, is it a couple 6-hole loops? We don't know exactly what we want to do, but we have, you know, the field of dreams down there to think about it. So we're having fun dreaming about it, and we're going to work with, you know, smart people and creative people to figure out where we go. In the meantime, we're preparing to host the national championship in 2024 and every 5 to 6 years from that point forward. So the nice thing is to do that, we don't have to do a lot because Pinehurst number 2 doesn't really need to change. It's as close as you can come to playing a U.S. Open setup every day that doesn't need rough grown up or fairways narrowed. All we do for the Open is, you know, firm up the greens and speed them up a little bit, which thankfully we don't have to endure on a daily basis. So, getting ready for the next U.S. Open and all that comes with that is certainly on the list. And I guess last but not least is we're also considering putting a small hotel that would have a view of the cradle. Believe it or not, you know, we're one of the largest golf resorts in the world, and we don't have any rooms with a golf view. And so we're thinking about trying to solve that dilemma by building a potentially a 34 room lodge that would overlook the cradle and could also have some functionality during the U.S. Opens. Now that we're going to have U.S. Opens on a regular basis, maybe a permanent player locker room type facility that could go there. The cradle becomes the U.S. Open practice facility during the week of an Open. So we really see some synergy between having a locker room right there and letting players walk right out onto the cradle and begin warming up as they move their way onto the putting green and then over to the first tee. So we've got plenty on our plate. We've accomplished a lot over the last 5 to 7 years, but it feels like we've got an equal amount to do going forward, which is exciting and great news. One of the neat things, every time you come to Pinehurst, there's always something a little bit different. You may not necessarily be able to put your finger on it, but it could be the Cradle Pavilion, or it could be a new restaurant or whatever it's going to be. But there's always, you know, our goal is to always have something new for you to experience when you come.
Well, I think, you know, you don't have to twist my arm too hard to get me back, but you know, rattling off that list of you know, wonderful ideas makes me you know, really want to start, you know, calling my booking agent again. You know, you were talking about working with creative people. one of my favorite things that I've seen you guys do, and this might be for some, maybe like, you know, kind of a couple of layers more inside, but I'm friends with Ian Gilly and Harrison and the guys at Sugarloaf Social Club and Sugarloaf Creative Lab. And I love what you guys have done as far as engaging them on, you know, some of these sort of the brands within a brand, right? You know, the work on number four, the work on number three, and telling a story through, you know, a creative approach to why those courses are different and what makes them unique. And I would love to kind of just get your take on how that has played out, you know, for your guests and for those that are there. You know, again, you talk about trying to always bring something new. Those sometimes can be areas that are not as intensive as redoing an entire golf course, but can have a pretty large effect too.
Indeed. I'm glad you mentioned that. We met probably 5 years ago, and they were doing one of their gatherings of their guys, and they wanted to come play. I guess they were coming to play the Cradle. So maybe it wasn't 5 years, maybe it was 4 years, and got in touch with us. And I remember sitting out on the Deuce patio, having a drink with Ian and Harrison and the guys. And I was just, you know, it was amazing to see, you know, to me, they were much younger than our normal guest, but they were so into the history and tradition of the game, and they saw all this opportunity. You know, they talked to us about, you know, logo development and branding on the golf courses. And we really did, you know, it's easy to become a little too, inward looking, and everything for us was about, you know, the Pinehurst logo and the Putter Boy logo. And they helped stretch our thinking a little bit to think that, you know, number four could have its own branding. And it was great to have an outside group that knows their stuff clearly and gets the tradition, but also is innovative. So they pushed us and challenged some of our thinking to be a little more progressive and, you know, simple little things like scorecard design and custom tees and that type of stuff. When you add it all up, it begins to make a big impact and begins to affect how you feel about the place. Another small little detail that it really wasn't a result of them, but we began to, you know, embrace the push cart. And it's a subtle little thing, but when number four reopened, we decided, all right, we're going to do a pilot program and allow push carts on course four. And it went so well that we now have push carts on all nine of our you know, 18 hole courses. So little talented creative people like the Sugarloaf crowd can make a big impact, and it's good to see that you notice what they've done. And again, it's subtle, but it contributes to the overall feeling that you get while you're here.
Well, you know, I know you've also had engagements with other influencers and creators and, you know, again, bringing voices of golf's newest generation to the property. And, you know, you had Riggs from Barstool up there for how many days was he up there last year?
99
days, which is incredible. you know, and the guys from No Lane Up have been up there quite a bit and do a lot. I think all of that is really helping, you know, re-inspire a new generation of people to come and inspect what's going on. And I think, again, you know, there's all they really have to do, all anyone has to do, is be able to see what's happening there. And it becomes, you know, pretty evident that it's a special place and one that is really a lot of fun for anyone, no matter, you know, what age you're never how many candles you're putting on the cake that year. But it's really great to see. I love it.
When you mentioned, when you said that, it reminded me, the Deuce, our newest bar and restaurant behind the 18th hole of number two, we had Tyson Lamb, who got a lot of exposure for the trophy he did at Congaree recently. He also designed our sign. It's a big whiskey barrel that he took two whiskey barrels and made an oversized one with some of his great metal work. And again, that's a subtle little thing, but we thought, what a neat opportunity to partner with a talented, you know, I don't want to call him an influencer. He's a putter maker, but also an influencer. So yeah, it's been fun to find, you know, folks like that we can partner with.
Yeah. I love it. So, you know, when you're not working at the resort and maybe you're just enjoying, the things, you know, in the community, Yeah, and this is me, you know, prying a little bit because I'm working to convince my wife to move there. So, what are the other things about the broader community up there that you enjoy, that you and your family go and participate in, or you know, where do you spend your time that's not necessarily on the resort property?
Yeah, one of the things you don't know about me, Jay, is I'm pretty shallow. a lot of it does revolve around here, but what's been fun for me is that my 14-year-old son has now started playing the game. So I do find now that, you know, he and I are coming over here and we'll sneak away to the little putting and chipping green by the 10th hole of Pinehurst number 2. And you can sneak down there and really not see anybody else. Or he's going down to the golf academy and having lessons. But my wife is big into the tennis scene here. So there's mm-hmm. a big tennis scene. There's wonderful nature areas. There's the Weymouth Woods is a park that my daughter and I like to go to and walk around. The equestrian, if you're an equestrian person, there's quite an equestrian scene here as well in Southern Pines. Once we opened our brewery, I've started, you know, dabbling in the beer scene. And so we've got some neat places down in, you know, Southern Pines has a brewery, Aberdeen has a brewery. We've got some great tap rooms around town. The food scene here has gotten really good. So, but we're for the most part homebodies and, but it is a great place to live. There's great families who live here. Our proximity to the major army base, Fort Bragg, has brought a lot of youth into our community as well. There's a great medical center mm-hmm. here. So, you know, there really, when we moved here in 1996, the population of Pinehurst was probably 6,000, 7,000 people. And now we're at maybe 17,000 people.
Wow.
So, you know, still a charming little village, but we're growing. And when you add up Southern Pines and Aberdeen, you quickly get up to about 50,000 people. But, It's a great place to live. It's a great place to visit, clearly. And I'm always reminded when I go away and experience the real world in real cities, when I go on different trips and I get to come home to Pinehurst, it makes me realize why you all like coming here so much. Just because it is an escape. It's a antidote to the modern world sometimes. And we get to live in it 365 days a year.
Yeah, in Jim Dodson's latest book, he referred to it, you know, his life behind the pine curtain. And I thought that was a brilliant way to frame it. And life behind the pine curtain looks pretty good from my perspective. You know, maybe a good way to kind of wrap things up, you know, I'll ask you a question as a writer. You know, you've had such a rich history of writers and golf personalities that have called that area home. Is it just that level of intoxication that keeps people pulled in and inspires them to, you know, craft tales about the game and sort of enjoy that lifestyle so much?
I love that was a scene here of the writers, and I hope that we can get back to it. I do believe that, you know, to be at Pinehurst right now is to be part of the celebration of the game of golf, and, mm-hmm. and all of the of us who know it and love it want to find ways to get closer to it. And so you can, you know, we're here in the heart of North Carolina. You know, considered a remote location, but you can sit in a rocking chair on the Carolina front porch, and the world of golf passes through here, you know, once every 3 years. And so while we're remote, everyone comes here and makes their pilgrimage. And so you get to feel very engaged, even though you're in a remote destination. And so, like I said, there's so many good things happening in golf right now that give me great hope for the future. And I think all of them are happening here, whatever they are, whether it's short course, whether it's junior golf, whether it's, you know, you name it, history. We have a little bit of all of it. And so the game is being celebrated here every day. And we want people who want to amplify that and participate in it to come here and to be part of it. So let me know what I need to do with your wife and how we need to make that happen. But, you know, we don't want to be all things to all people, but, you know, Golf Pride has their corporate headquarters here.
Yeah, I saw it.
Now the USGA is going to be here. And so we do think that we've got the beginnings of what could be a neat little microcosm of golf related industries and individuals. And we want them to call Pinehurst home. So, all those listeners, let's make it happen.
Yeah. Well, I love it. And, can't thank you enough for, you know, what you do at the resort. Like I said, man, you know, I to take 24 people up there and, you know, we had a debrief lunch today of quite a few of us and everybody's still smiling. It was just such an, exquisite experience and what you've done there and what the whole team is doing every day is wonderful. The hospitality is top notch. And, I think I enjoy having that Carolina breeze in my hair and maybe a little too much, but, maybe we'll get to do more of it in the future, but I appreciate your time, Tom. And thanks for, having a conversation with me. And I can't wait to get back up there and catch you walking around the property, smiling again. It's a worthwhile place to be.
Thank you for being here. It makes us proud that you guys, your group chose to spend your time here, and it's good. I've been able to see you twice this year. Probably means I won't see you for the rest of the year in Pinehurst, but I know we'll connect somewhere sometime soon.
Probably not, but you know, never say never. Well, you, we'll Jeff. Do it again soon, Tom. Like I said, thanks for your time, and I'll be in touch, and certainly we'll let you know next time we turn our wheels that way.
All the best.
Appreciate it. All right, buddy. Thank you.
Bye-bye.